From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. An explosion in northwest Pakistan has destroyed a passenger van, killing at least 12 people and wounding 8 others. From Islamabad, NPR's Julie McCarthy reports the blast coincided with a new report finding the number of terrorist attacks in Pakistan declined last year.
A senior police official said today's attack was caused by a time bomb weighing approximately 14 pounds that had been fitted inside a canister placed inside the van. It detonated as the vehicle traveled between the cities of Hangu and Kohat in northwest Pakistan, an area some 95 miles south of Peshawar, and where militants have struck markets, police stations, and mosques with devastating effect the past year. This latest episode comes as Pakistan's Institute for Peace says that the incidents of violence and terrorism fell by 11% in 2010 compared to 2009. But the study also concludes there is no long-term strategy to combat militancy in Pakistan, where a sense of instability is growing in the country's largest cities. Julie McCarthy, NPR News, Islamabad.
Tunisian security forces used water cannons, tear gas, and fired shots into the air as they sought to quell demonstrations. As the prime minister announced a unity coalition cabinet today, protesters in the country's capital are demanding the ruling party of Tunisia's ousted president give up power. Latest protests follow the ouster of President Ben Ali last week. Officials say at least 78 people have died in the wave of anti-government protests. Thousands gathered in Atlanta today to commemorate the birthday of Martin Luther King Jr. Georgia Public Broadcasting's Melissa Stiers reports among them political leaders who cited the recent tragedy in Tucson, Arizona, to show the relevance of Dr. King's teachings.
In the same church where King preached his message of nonviolence, Attorney General Eric Holder invoked the recent shooting that left 6 people dead and Arizona Representative Gabrielle Giffords hospitalized.
Last week, a senseless rampage in Tucson, Arizona, reminded us that more than 40 years after Dr. King's own tragic death, our own long struggle to end and eradicate violence goes on.
U.S. Senator Johnny Isaacson and Congressman John Lewis also referenced the tragedy as a kind of wake-up call for unity. The civil rights icon and peace activist was 39 when he was assassinated in 1968. He would have been 82 years old. For NPR News, I'm Melissa Stiers in Atlanta.
Doctors treating wounded Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords announced today a surgical procedure to remove bone fragments from an area above her right eye went well. Dr. Michael LaMalde is Giffords' neurosurgeon.
Within a few hours of the surgery, she was waking up. And through the weekend, she came back to the same baseline she had been before the surgery, that same level of interaction she's been having with us. And that's all very good. And at this time, we're hoping to continue tying up those loose ends and get her ready for that third phase of her care, the rehabilitation.
Giffords still can't speak because of a tracheotomy done to improve her breathing. This is NPR. Iranian woman convicted of adultery and sentenced to death by stoning now instead may only face a prison sentence for acting as an accessory in the killing of her husband. The head of Iran's Human Rights Committee, in an apparent contradiction of previous court documents, says the stoning sentence has not been finalized. The case drew widespread international condemnation, with Brazil offering the woman asylum. Sakina Mohammadi Ashtiani appeared before journalists this month, where she admitted to complicity in her husband's killing and also denied that she had been pressured into making the public confession. Arts advocate R. Philip Haynes Jr. has died in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. As NPR's Paul Brown reports, Haynes was a major force in establishing arts councils around the U.S. and in starting the nation's first standalone state school to train students in the arts. He was 84.
Philip Haynes was a self-described rich kid, scion of the Haynes family, famous for producing hosiery and underwear, who became enthralled by the arts and public service.
He got deeply engaged in the early 50s and just gave his life to it.
That's Milton Rhodes, who Haynes once hired to direct the Arts Council in Winston-Salem, which had started as the nation's first in 1949. Rhodes recalls Haynes energetically promoting the arts and establishment of arts councils across the country.
He felt that creativity was the basis of the American potential.
Today, there are some 5,000 arts councils nationwide. Philip Haynes was also a key organizer and financial backer of what is now the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. Paul Brown, NPR News.
U.S. markets are closed for the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, though there was trading in Europe today. The overseas markets largely ending on a flat note. I'm Jack Speer, NPR News, in Washington.